This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. What is the benefit of using poetry in schools and classrooms? Our panel of guests today believe that poetry can be one of the answers to arrest the declining level of English among Malaysian youths, as well as get them interested in socio-economic issues affecting the nation. Elaine Foster is the founder of Poetry Cafe KL. Dr. Shalini Fernandez is an associate professor of English and Communications. And Ilya Sumanto is a performance poet who also teaches drama and speech. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Hello.
First question, it might seem obvious, but I feel the need to ask. How did all of you first get introduced to poetry, and how did that introduction affect how you viewed it after?
I think I was very lucky. I was schooled in international school and also in the UK. Even then, the poetry, the poetry segment or the focus is very little. But I had a very inspiring English teacher. I think most people claim, especially if they love poetry, is because they had a very inspiring English teacher.
Well, I started off with keeping a diary, and I wrote about the boys I liked and how I hated my mother. And then one day my mom sat on a couch and asked me, "What is this?" with a diary in her hand. And I stopped writing ever since. And then in 2009, I took part in the Slam poetry, which Elaine hosted, and, you know, it all began from there.
Dr. Shalini?
In my case, I started reading at around 5, I think, and I didn't stop. So poetry was some of the things that I read, and I kind of devoured books, and I devoured poetry, and I loved the sheer imagery in the words, you know, the visuality, the sound, the taste, you can literally feel it. So after that, you just can't go back.
And it might be, you know, kind of asking you guys to pick a favorite child, but do you have any favorite poems, you know, any that come to mind, any that you've loved for a long time?
I would definitely have to say Shel Silverstein. He was my favorite, and we all know Shel Silverstein here.
One of my favorite poets,
yeah.
Too.
Where the Sidewalk Ends. There's one poem that I used to recite before, like, classes. It was called Listen to the Mustn'ts, Child. I won't do it now. But it's basically about how you can do anything you want. Don't let anyone tell you what you can do. Your parents or teachers don'ts, mustn'ts, won'ts. It's very inspiring.
Shel Silverstein's an interesting one because I think as an introduction, he's really great because poetry has a tendency, well, I suppose, by some people to feel kind of stuffy. And Elaine, you said that poetry is no longer boring or inaccessible and is being used in a fresh and relevant way in schools. How so?
Why did I say that? Well, first of all, the fact that poetry educators are using spoken word in schools. Spoken word is way more accessible and popular. You may or may not know, but it definitely has come from a trend that has come out of Europe and the States, where they are using, they have kind of reinvented or revolutionized poetry through the spoken word movement. So whereby people thought that it was stuffy and written and kind of war poetry, spoken word, it was very democratizing. It was talking about yourself, it was about identity, and it totally broke down structures. It said, you don't need to write structure. And of course, immediately became a lot more accessible.
Dr. Shalini, Ilya, how do you both incorporate poetry into your lessons?
Okay. I teach literature and I also teach translation. So some of the things that my students do is that when they learn poetry, they learn how to analyze it. They also learn how to write poetry. They translate poetry. And in the literature classes that we run at my university, they also perform. So we've had several poetry performances where the students in the class actually get up on a stage at some point during the class, and they actually perform it for an audience. So these are some of the things that we're doing with poetry. And when Elaine pitched, you know, when we asked Elaine to actually do our slam, it was very effective because the students actually really enjoyed getting up there and having their say.
Well, I teach poetry through dramatizing it. Most English classes teach literature through or with texts owned by, you know, like legit authors.
Legit.
But like in my class, kids write their own poem. Like, yeah. I give them structures, and then they just fill in. That's the first step. And then we stagecraft and create a performance based on what they've written.
I mean, I think that's the two points exactly why poetry is more accessible, more fun: the performative side, and clearly the owning it, writing your own work, the original writing.
Instead of using other people's words,
you
perform your own, empower your own voice.
And how do you find people responding to that? You know, when you first say, okay, this is what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be writing your own poems. You're going to eventually be performing them.
But we don't tell them.
Just sprung on them.
We don't tell them.
It can be scary.
No. How do they...
Actually, you'd be surprised. A lot of the students do write. It's just that they don't actually tell you. And then when you start asking questions about what they write, where they write, a lot of them keep diaries, a lot of them actually, surprisingly, some of them write fan fiction, some of them write poetry. And then when you ask them to actually think about it and to do it in class, they are capable. And the thing is not to make it an isolated effort. We put them in groups and ask them to come up with something, and when they can discuss and produce something together, they actually produce something very good. And that develops then into an individual talent as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Kids already know nursery rhymes, and we are there in the class, not as teachers, but we facilitate, you know, what's already naturally there and to strengthen them.
We have a message actually from a listener who says, how can we seriously expect poetry to help students in English when teachers insist on pronouncing poems as poems?
Poem,
yes. And then he went on to name the school, which I'm not going to do.
Sure.
But I think that's a relevant question in that it's an important one in terms of how teachers approach poetry, you know, how important the role of poetry is to teachers in schools. Have any of you observed that, you know, an increasing interest on the part of the teacher, or do teachers also resist?
Teachers are generally resistant. Teachers in schools here and across the world, I get, again, because of this kind of traditional, conventional, very boring way of teaching. To answer the Twitter comment, I mean, poetry isn't just about pronunciation or speaking English in a certain kind of way. So, I mean, if the teacher says poem, as long as the kid knows what a poem is, you know, you're still learning about language. As speech and drama teacher as well, there's a big discussion about how important accent is. And we're moving away from that kind of the British English accent. And, yeah, so... What was the question again?
How can we expect poetry to help students in English? But I think that answers that,
right?
Because
I think we should deviate from teaching them, about only grammar. But
yeah,
we
can
have to
grammar.
Start focusing on the content itself. Like today,
thinking in language.
Yes. Exactly, thinking in language. I had a student, a Japanese student. He can barely speak anything in English, but he can understand. And we did the What Bugs Me poem, where you have to list the 10 things that, you know, you dislike. And then he just stared at the paper. I understand, because, you know, I came from the background where English, or language in general, was frightening to me. So I really understand how it feels to just stare at a paper and, you know, leave it blank for forever.
Especially if English is your second language.
Yes.
I have to say, because I've learned foreign languages, I use poetry as a way of actually learning the language.
Mm.
Because what my friends and I did, we tossed up a whole bunch of words and then we went creative with those. And you learn language beautifully like that because you learn how to use it. It's not just, this is a verb, this is a noun, this is an adjective. It is, how can I communicate with that? And poetry allows that. And I'm going to quote E.M. Foster here, because he says in one of his books, only connect. And I think that's what poetry helps us to do. In schools as well.
How then would more poetry education be integrated into our current schooling system in a healthy way? You know, from your points of view, what could be done?
I think right now, going through the private universities as being kind of the only place to do it, because I guess private schools are looking to add on to their curriculums, and they have the money to bring in extra teachers. In the 50s in the States, they had a poets in schools program, and the poets or the outsiders were considered agent provocateurs. So that's kind of also, I imagine that's the role, that the way that the school should see it as well. It doesn't need to be, I mean, full-time education, poetry education and curriculum would be awesome. But we should start off with outsiders coming in, running short-term projects, which is what we do, mm-hmm. kind of shake up things a bit. And then hopefully the teachers will also be inspired and then go off and bring it in to their classrooms in a longer, more sustainable way. Yes. Yes, inspiring, not just training them. Training sounds like work. Inspire them to want to actually to love it, and then for the kids to love it too. Yeah.
It needs a long-term plan.
I'm speaking today with Elaine Foster, Dr. Shalini Fernandez, and Ilya Sumanto. We are discussing the role of poetry in education and in getting, I don't want to say youths. Youths make us sound collectively old. But in getting the young of Malaysia, it's not much, in getting Malaysians as a whole to be interested in language as well as the social issues in our country. Up next, we find out more about the slam, poetry slam and spoken word scene here in Malaysia. You're listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Gender. He is a boy, she is a girl. Gender. Long hair, pink and delicate lace. Girl. Short hair, blue and angular face. Boy. Gender. But we are water. Our genders undefined by our sex, but we are fluid, not contained in a single label. And like water, like fluid, you pour us into one of two glasses. And like water, like fluid, we will shape ourselves into the container.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. I'm in the studio with me today, Elaine Foster, Dr. Shalini Fernandez, and Ilya Sumanto. We are discussing poetry education. You also just heard from Tien, and that is her poem from
such an awesome poem.
She did that.
We were snapping our fingers. She did that at a recent slam at It wasn't an international school. It was a university slam. But she came in from the school side, mm-hmm. and that particular school. Here's a prime example of if you put poetry full time in a school, they have a poetry club which is student led, and she's a year nine, and she blew the university students out of the water with that.
And that seems as good a note as any to ask. Elaine, why do you think poetry slams are a good way to get young people involved in social issues?
Because the process as well. So it's like asking, what do we want to write about today? And to insist that they write about something that is reflective and meaningful and not just who I love. Sorry, no offense, Ilya, who you fancy. Sorry, how much you hate your mom. I mean, we push them immediately to get over that content. Yeah. We're adults. Let's be serious. What's affecting you? So we play games. We try to elicit what they're thinking about, and then kind of try to force them to unpack it and write about it.
And yeah, because poetry's most themes from poetry slam.
It comes from them direct.
Yes.
They revolve
marginalized issues like racism.
Yeah.
Discrimination, gender, and all
that. It's not like we're feeding them. It's the stuff that comes out. And then it's the stuff that they'd like to talk about, but they don't. And then we give them that platform to do it, and then it all comes out. And then you can't put it back in.
Yeah. That's how we teach a social consciousness.
It also is very good because Poetry Slam demystifies poetry. Mm. I think there's just too much sort of like a reverence for the idea of poetry as something that is ethereal or aesthetic and unattainable and you can't do it. And I think Poetry Slam brings it back down to ground, which is exactly where it was supposed to be. I mean, poetry started out as the spoken word.
Absolutely.
And that is what it's being brought back to. And I think that's fantastic.
And also the way that it responds to current life. It has always done that, either in an abstract way or in a literal way. I guess spoken word can be more literal, but it's doing exactly the same thing, responding to immediate issues that you are immediately being affected by personally.
Listening to that, what struck me most is her confidence in reciting, in delivering the poem. And is that something, how do you build that up? Because I think that there are people for whom, you know, if the poems are particularly personal, if they are, perhaps hard to speak aloud, how do you encourage them to do that?
I think, first of all, you have to engender a sense of self-confidence. Part of the poetry education and the training is to make them
feel safe
and comfortable, but important. Like, kids don't think that they have a voice. As soon as you tell them that their opinion counts, this kind of idea of using the voice or fear of public speaking will go away. People who are afraid of public speaking aren't necessarily afraid of the public speaking. They're afraid that their voices aren't worth anything. So if you engender that, it becomes much easier.
Overall, Elaine, how much has Poetry Slam and the spoken word scene developed here, you know, since your appearance on BFM in 2012?
A lot, actually. There is this new kind of open mic night. It's called If Walls Could Talk. Melissa Rani was in here, I think, a couple weeks ago talking about it. just as an example, whereby we were scraping to get audience and being like the side add-ons to open mics, like we would come on, musicians would play, and people would leave during the poets. This event, people leave when the musicians come on. Mel's events every 2 weeks, and it's packed out house. So I think that is an example of how far it's come, but very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Coming back to that performance just then, what makes for a good spoken word performance? What is the thing that gets the fingers snapping, that gets people's attention?
I think it's the energy. You know, if you bring your energy out, your audience can feel you.
Lines, too. I mean, sometimes the lines are just so, I don't even know how to say it, like, on, so clever, so like, whoa. It's really, really hard to explain. There was, at the recent slam that we did with Dr. Shalini, one of the girls came on and her opening line was, respect me. And it was like,
that's
boom,
it.
That's all she had to say.
She just said that.
Like even the hairs on my arms are sticking up, mm-hmm. just the fact that she did that, yeah.
And a bit more than that as well, I think it's the sincerity with which it is delivered, because you have to own it. And if you don't own it, you can't present it well.
Mm.
You can't actually connect.
It has to be engaging as well. It has to be relatable to audience, but different.
But that's the thing about spoken word, isn't it? It's you engage the audience both through the content and the performance.
Yes.
And that's an important point, because is it properly understood as its own sort of separate category? Because I would imagine that what you write down on paper and what you deliver in person, while they might both be beautiful, a lot of what you're all saying is that point about sincerity, about owning it, and that might not always come through with the same intensity on paper.
True.
So is it understood as, you know, spoken word is spoken word, and if you're trying to write a poem for somebody to read, you kind of have to do it in a different way?
This is just one of those philosophical questions, or academic questions, sorry, that I really try not to get into. But yes, if we go into a class and say we're writing spoken word today, we're writing with specific tools to write for performance. But of course, all poetry was written to be read out loud. But yes, spoken word is particularly performative, and there are particular things that you use, which are usually the same things you do for speech writing. Repetition, audience participation, eye contact, body expression, almost the same thing as writing a speech.
Variation of tone, and also, I would say, in the case of spoken word, also body language, very important.
Yeah, and the difference between poetry, I mean, spoken word poetry, than other types of writing is sounds, the sounds.
The sounds,
yeah.
The way that the words actually sound, yeah.
And pronounced.
Yeah, pronounced. Exactly.
Well, think of it in these terms. You can write a novel and you can write a play. The play is two parts. It's the words on the paper, and then the second part that brings it up to life is actually the performance.
Yeah.
And that is what spoken word is about. It's the words on the paper that then become alive as a result of the performance.
That's a good analogy.
Coming back to that point about education, were any of you part of the team of poetry educators who visited over 100 national schools across the country?
Yes. Yeah. Gideon and I were part of that road show. We were on a bus. It was a factory of poetry.
Of the most thrilling experiences for me.
And that's an example of where we brought poetry into national schools, and it totally worked. Totally worked, meaning we engaged most of the kids, and we got most of them writing and most of them performing, albeit it was in English. I think it would have been a lot more useful in terms of social development if we had gone in there using BM.
Yeah, that was something that I did kind of want to explore, because, you know, we're talking about it today in terms of
English.
But of course, we also have a rich literary tradition here of poetry in other languages, including Malay. So with that, is there room for that in terms of our education, of being able to go in and say, okay, look, you know, write in the language that you feel most comfortable in, you know, if you want to kind of surface those issues?
I mean, yeah, totally. Like I was saying earlier about this idea of English being your second language, and that Japanese boy, that he probably just couldn't write in English. If you gave him the opportunity and talked to him in Japanese or asked him to write in Japanese, he would have probably got some amazing stuff. So it's not about speaking a language, mm-hmm. per se. The education is about the social development, the confidence building.
And also the safety net for the students.
Yes. So there's so much room for other language, especially, I mean, I would totally encourage teachers to do BM slams. We did one once.
It was called Rentapusi.
And there's loads. There are loads of Bahasa-speaking poets who do both kind of conventional poetry and, sorry, traditional poetry and spoken word. It's a huge scene, huge.
Mm-hmm. So in a workshop or a class that's run by a poetry educator, what happens? Can you just kind of take me through it?
Ilya, what do poetry educators do in schools? What do you do?
So if you were teaching me a class, if I were part of your class, what could I expect? What would happen?
Okay, we would first play drama games. And then there's this particular game that I like called the Circle of Truth, where students will sit.
It's a good game.
Yeah, it's a good game. Sit around a circle, and one by one will stand up talking about something that bugs them or something that they like. And if the fellow students feel the same way, they have to stand up and exchange places. And, you know, there and then they can start opening up and explore themselves. And then I'll get you, Lynn, to write. I'll give you a structure. It's like a list of things that interest you. Or
based on the game, actually.
Yeah,
based on the content of the game.
Yeah, and we perform it.
So it starts from a place of allowing the kids to speak before developing it further.
Make them feel energized and comfortable with the space. Makes them feel safe. That's the most important thing when we...
I mean, if you don't feel comfortable to speak out the way you feel and your opinions, exactly what Dr. Cellini said, you come from a place of authenticity.
Yes.
If you can't tell people how you feel, then how are you going to write about that in a real kind of way? So, yeah, that's how we started out.
We have teachers saying that lack of interest is the main reason why students are poor in English. And then we have teachers in teaching kids at a higher level saying that, you know, students taking SPM or the GCEs don't seem to find English fun. Is that an issue? I mean, do you see that as a major problem, the idea of making the language itself, if not accessible, then enjoyable to use or to learn?
I mean, it's not just a problem, it's a total waste. What a waste that is to not be able to engage or to enjoy or to, participate in the culture of writing and thinking and language. And it is definitely a problem. I see what you mean. With the kids that don't speak English at all, it's too hard. And with the kids who probably grew up speaking English at home, it's too easy. It's too much about grammar and analyzing boring essays. And I suppose that's why they bring us in too, as in the poetry education.
Mm-hmm. And you all teach or have taught students at different levels. You know, Dr. Cellini, you teach tertiary level students. Ilya, your students are below 12. Elaine, all ages. How do you adapt when you're teaching students who fall into all these different age groups? Does the Circle of Truth work at any age?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I've played it with uni students.
And up to 50-something, 60-something-year-olds. Yeah. It worked.
And it's amazing how much they want to confess, too, yeah? how much truth they want to tell. With the interesting thing about it is how the kids or the different ages react to the game and how much they expose themselves. Mm-hmm. And then that's what you're negotiating through, how to get them to challenge themselves, expose themselves more. And then, of course, if really, like, provocative kind of content comes up, having to deal with that as well. I mean, Ilya, what's your experience with teaching different ages in that game?
I guess it's all about the approach you use. You know, sometimes you have to be a monkey to get them to speak up.
Yeah.
Elaine, earlier you talked about how earlier in the scene you had spoken word kind of just being there as an add-on or something that was just sort of present.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads to a larger question. Why do you think poetry as a form has been kind of sidelined or marginalized, almost an afterthought, as opposed to something to study for its own merit, something that people can take an active interest in?
We were just talking about this outside, the kind of... the cutting down or the lessening of importance or prioritizing the humanities, the liberal arts. And that's obviously because we come in a production-based culture. So learning about the arts and language doesn't fit into our current model of production and capitalism. So universities and schools don't want to pay for it. And of course, the other things that we've talked about too, the seeming inaccessibility of it. The teachers are not being helped to teach it. And they're not also, I mean, if you come from a system where you were not inspired, why would you then teach it to your kids too?
That's true. Can I add to that? I think we tend to look at language in a very practical way in this country as something that we use to communicate. Mm. We don't see poetry very often as communicative, whereas it is. And I think that's where actually the poetry educators come in to show that you can communicate with poetry and communicate very effectively.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because young people can be struggling to find their own voice due to, you know, like societal pressure, like how your parents want you to think, how your teachers want you to believe, and all that. And because of exam-based education system makes them, you know, struggle to create their own identity as unique individuals.
Elaine, Poetry Cafe KL is having its annual Youth Poetry Slam this Saturday, 10 a.m. at the Black Box in Publica. What can we expect this year?
You can expect, we're focusing more on group poems. Actually, Teacher Ilya and I, we like to focus on group work because it brings in all that stuff about team building and writing together and all that nonsense. Not nonsense. but they're going to be some of the topics that, because we've been doing the training, so some of the topics are going to be a little bit provocative. I'm hoping that the audience will give them that safe space. We're going to expect primary school kids. We're going to expect high school kids from across the board between national schools, private schools, and international schools across Malaysia. Over 55 kids. It's going to be a packed out house. We got some awesome judges, and it's going to be really fun. So even if you don't have a kid going, or if you are a kid at heart, please, please come to the slam. It's going to be awesome.
Thank you all very much for coming in
Thank
today.
You, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
I've been speaking with Elaine Foster, Dr. Shalini Fernandez, and Ilya Sumanto. We have been discussing the role of poetry in education, both in English as well as in life, I think. And you have been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.